This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
This is the finest collection of Joseph Smith's teachings that has ever been published. It is a classified or subject-oriented collection of Joseph Smith's that melds both reminiscence and contemporary records in a way never achieved before. It is a marvelous work.
Coming up next, The Teachings of Joseph Smith, Part 2.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents The Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Tonight, we talk about this book. This represents something of a culmination. It's a high watermark, if you will, in the teachings of Joseph Smith published by the LDS Church. In preparation for our show, we interviewed some of the curriculum editors who were responsible for the creation of this manual, and we'll talk about the manual and what's in it. Now, we begin by reminding you that presenting the teachings of Joseph Smith, there were challenges that were not found in the teachings of his successors.
Ronald O. Barney.
Because Joseph Smith did not have scribes in the audience, as we've described, to capture what he said, because he made no concerted effort to have what he said published, we're not as fortunate in the things that we have from Joseph Smith as we are from subsequent Latter-day Saint prophets, whose sermons in large part were published, many of them verbatim. And so the curriculum editors give this provision, which I think is important for us to understand in light of the things that we are trying to convey regarding the teachings of Joseph Smith. During the lifetime of Joseph Smith, shorthand was not in widespread use. Therefore, the sermons he delivered were recorded imprecisely in longhand, generally by scribes, church leaders, or other church members. Almost all of Joseph Smith's addresses were given extemporaneously, without prepared texts. So the notes taken by those who listened to him constitute the only record of the discourses. While some lengthy reports of his addresses exist, most are summarizations of the messages delivered by the prophet. Unfortunately, there is no record for many of the discourses given by Joseph Smith. Of the more than 250 sermons he is known to have delivered, reports or notes taken by scribes or others cover only about 50 of the sermons given.
There are projected to be some 30 volumes of the Joseph Smith Papers, but of those, there won't be any devoted exclusively to his teachings. Now, why is that? And with that, what exactly then is this manual? And what's its purpose?
Susan Hainsworth.
What is in this book are the teachings, are the things that the prophet Joseph Smith said about gospel topics. Now, he said a lot about legal cases. He had a lot of legal problems. He said a lot about the everyday business of his life. How to deal with the many properties the saints were losing as they were driven out of their various places. He said a lot about financial matters, about financial problems, about dealing with mobs and persecution, about day-to-day matters in his own life and in the church. I rode my horse to this place. I ate breakfast. I came back. All of those things are contained in the Joseph Smith Papers. What we have is what he actually said about the gospel. And if you take what he said about the gospel, our book contains the very great majority of what he said. It is as close to comprehensive as we could make it with these exceptions. That is, that we only included the teachings he taught that apply to our day. Now, that is almost all of his teachings, with the exception of just a couple, and those are identified in the introduction to the manual.
Now, understandably, the church is very careful about the materials that they publish. Hence, this manual was subjected to critical review some 36 times, and it will be published in 76 languages.
David B. Marsh.
The first thing I'd like to say is that the development of this book was done under the direction of the prophets and the apostles of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that was a blessing for us to know that everything we did as a staff was looked at and reviewed and revised by the brethren, or our church leaders. And that gives us a lot of safety in the things that we do, that it's being approved of and looked at by them before it goes out to members of the church, so that the doctrine is accurate and it's set in such a way that's appropriate for church members to hear. The other thing I want to say was the intent of this series of books, the teachings of presidents of the church, back 14 years ago when they started talking about these books. The first presidency in Quorum of the Twelve had basically three ideas in mind that they wanted to accomplish with these books. The first one was that they wanted us to develop a composite or an artificial sermon by the quotes from each prophet on certain gospel topics that were relevant to members of the church today. And so, you know, they asked us to go through all of the talks that a certain prophet gave and just glean out of there any quote we could find that related to a certain topic. And then from those disparate quotes or quotes from disparate sources, we would compile them in such a way that they made a composite sermon that a member of the church could just read through, just like they were reading a talk of one of the church leaders today in General Conference. The second reason that they wanted to accomplish by these books was that members of the church, as they collected these over the years, would develop a library of prophetic teachings. And particularly for international or members living out in international areas outside of the United States, they don't have a lot of materials in their languages. And so these books, for many of them, would be the first time that they would receive teachings of the prophets of this last dispensation in their language. And then the third reason they wanted these was to have it be as a teaching resource.
This book took many years to produce. In the church curriculum department, editors, committee members, other people, writers, curriculum developers took 7 years to produce the book. Before that, it was many years in the church historical department, where they worked to prepare materials that we could use to establish what were actually the teachings of the prophet, so that we could draw from those in preparing this book. This enormous care was taken in all kinds of ways because of the importance of this book and because the First Presidency in the Twelve wanted the book to stand for many years as a standard and as a great resource for the saints throughout the world.
Now remember, this is not a book of Joseph Smith's sermons. It's a book of his teachings. Those teachings come from sources in addition to the sermons.
We have almost all of the teachings that are available to us on those topics. We need to remember that we have record of about 250 sermons that the prophet gave. We know he gave many more than that. Of those 250, we only have notes or records of about 50. Now, the prophet also taught in other contexts, in letters, in his journal. But there is not an inexhaustible supply of teachings from the prophet on gospel topics. What there are mostly in this book. So much research was done to ensure that this was true. And I think sometimes that Latter-day Saints might not appreciate how much of the prophet's teaching is in this book.
Most of the teachings that are found in this manual can be found also in a familiar compilation called The History of the Church.
R. Eric Smith.
The question may be asked, why did we decide to quote so much from the history of the church instead of using the original sources that underlie the history of the church? Keep in mind that the Joseph Smith Teachings Manual is a curriculum manual. The audience of the manual is a general church audience. Most of the members of the church actually live outside of the United States, and many of those are first-generation converts to the church. We made the decision to use the History of the Church volumes with full knowledge of what we were doing. We understood the limitations. The decision to use History of the Church was made with the direction of the First Presidency and Quorum of the Twelve and in consultation with representatives of the Church History Department. The purpose of the manual is to increase devotion and faith among the saints. So even though in the manual we try to meet very high scholarly standards, the work is not a work of history or scholarship per se. It is a curriculum product that's designed to increase faith and devotion. The teachings that are presented in the manual need to be put into clear and standard English so that they can be translated into dozens of other languages. If our teachings in the English version were presented with original misspellings and poor punctuation and grammar, those problems could not survive in translation. So there was no sense in us preserving those original problems in the English version.
While the history of the church became the primary text for much of the manual, each of those quotations from the history of the church was taken back and compared to the original documents. And then both of those sources, primary and secondary, are noted at the end of each chapter.
We wanted the manual to meet high scholarly standards. We use the word transparent. This is, we want people to know exactly what we were doing, even if they might not agree necessarily with all of our choices. We wanted to disclose all the information that readers needed to be able to tell what sources we are using and to understand the limitations with those sources.
We ensured that we went to original sources for every historical detail. Every detail of the prophet's life that is mentioned in this book has been verified with historical sources.
We've always had citations in manuals before, but we've never had so much detail that explains where the quote came from and even goes back to the most original source. Sometimes we like to quote a source that's a second-hand source, but we quote it because it's more accessible to members of the church if they want to go and study that. We feel like it's nice to give them that second-hand source because it's more accessible. But in this case, we not only gave second-hand sources, but we tried to go back to the most original source for every quote that we found of Joseph Smith. For me, that aspect of the book increases its credibility as well as the scholarship of the book.
Things that come out from the curriculum department of the church have a zero tolerance for mistakes of any kind. We're not talking about just editorial mistakes. We're talking about historical mistakes or doctrinal mistakes. We want them to be as close to absolutely right as they can be. And that's a standard that can't be held for many other documents.
Historically, I believe that this book will become known as the source for the teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith. We've had many books over the years that the church has published and others have that contain his teachings, but this one had a particularly great amount of intense research and refining and historical research to just make sure that the quotes that we're using were the quotes that we can be mostly assured that they were from Joseph Smith.
Now, it should be pointed out that this manual does not contain everything that Joseph Smith taught.
When were teachings not included in this book? Some teachings didn't meet scholarly standards, and we had a very strict scholarly standard for what was applied in this book. We used the same standard that the Joseph Smith Papers people did. We used no materials that they did not approve. For example, if someone did not actually hear the prophet say something, their material could not be used. They could not have recalled what someone else told them. Or sometimes the prophet was not closely enough connected to the preparation of the material. For example, lectures on faith was not used in this book because We are not absolutely sure how closely the prophet was connected to the preparation of that document. Also, sometimes teachings were on a gospel topic, but they were tangential. They hit the gospel topic just tangentially. Or they were presented with so much historical context that it was difficult to sort out the gem. And so those were not included.
In the years and decades after Joseph Smith's death, many church members and leaders reported the teachings that they remembered him giving when he was alive. For example, in General Conference sermons from the 1850s and beyond, church leaders like Brigham Young and Wilfred Woodruff, who knew Joseph Smith, report many of his teachings, and these teachings were not recorded in his lifetime. So the only way that we know of these teachings is because people remembered them. In the Joseph Smith Teachings Manual, we use remembered teachings only when they are firsthand. That is, when the person who provides us the teaching actually heard the teaching come from the mouth of Joseph Smith. We do not use secondhand accounts.
In addition to 125 different gospel topics, there are also numerous and various types of illustrations in the manual.
Another nice thing about this book is that it has over 140 photos, illustrations, and paintings, some of which are published for the first time in this book. And that's in the previous books in this series. We haven't done that many photos, but in this book they wanted to have some particularly more historical photos so that the history of the church and different events in the history of the church could be told pictorially as well as through the teachings of the prophet and the other connective paragraphs that are in the book. Up in the section of the life and ministry of the prophet, there's a nice map in there of the place where Joseph Smith lived, the Joseph Smith Senior Farm and the land there, which I think members of the church will appreciate. You can get an idea of the close proximity that different things were, particularly the where the first vision took place in the Sacred Grove and where that was in relation to the log home and later the other home that Joseph Smith and his family built for themselves. There's a great picture on page 88 of the baptism of Joseph Smith Sr., the prophet's father, on April 6, 1830, which is a sweet and touching picture of Joseph and his father embracing after the prophet's father comes out of the river where he was baptized. On page 306, there's a new piece of art that was painted that depicts the appearance of Elijah in the Kirtland Temple, which is a nice painting. There's another picture on page 340 where Joseph Smith calms an angry mob that came to arrest him, and there's a story told there as well right next to the picture of how it just tells the story of how the mob came in, and the prophet's mother was there, and she went and got the prophet, and he talks to them and calms them down. And whereas they came to arrest him, afterwards they said, you better not go out there. There's people that want to get you, and we'll guard you, so to speak. There's another picture on page 380 where Joseph Smith heals Elijah Fordham. And again, it's a sweet story. Many people were sick, and Joseph Smith himself was sick, but was able to get up and go around and bless other people. And the story of Elijah Fordham is told there as well, and it's a sweet story to read and to learn about. And then one other picture on page 448 is a new picture. It's not published first time in this particular book, but it's a newer picture that depicts the creation of the Relief Society and shows Joseph Smith standing before some of the sisters in Nauvoo, organizing them for the first time.
As Joseph Smith was ever concerned about his personal deportment and also the example that he set for his people, it's appropriate that this manual contains stories from the life of the prophet Joseph Smith. These serve, if you will, as illustrations of his teachings.
Another aspect of the book is the From the Life of Joseph Smith section, which is the first part of each chapter in the book. Yeah. And one of the things that I think people will appreciate knowing that you may not pick up just by reading the book, but that is that each of these were written so that if you read them as you read the book chronologically, you will get a brief history of the prophet Joseph Smith.
Because the From the Life of sections tell the story of the prophet in an organized way, they build his life as the spine of the book, you have a great combination of history and doctrine, and so you are able to see these kind of themes.
There were six categories of source material that were used in the book, and it's in the appendix that these sources are explained.
The teachings come from six categories: sermons, articles, letters, journals, recollections, and scriptures. The historical record indicates that Joseph Smith gave at least 250 sermons. He probably gave more than that, but we have record of only 250. But of those 250 sermons, we have notes or reports for only about 50 of those. A second category of sources of Joseph Smith's materials that we used in the manual is articles, of which he was the author. Joseph Smith wrote some articles himself or dictated them. In many other cases, he assigned a church leader or clerk to write an article on a particular topic, and then Joseph Smith would read that article and approve it and sign it and publish it in his name. Another category of teachings we used in the manual is letters. As with articles, a letter that's attributed to Joseph Smith was not necessarily written by him. He may have written a letter in his own hand, and he did, in fact, write many letters in his own hand. But in other cases, he dictated to a scribe, and in yet other cases, he assigned someone to write on a particular topic, and then he approved and signed the letter. It must be noted that Joseph Smith wrote very little in his own journal. Of the more than 1,000 manuscript pages that we have today of Joseph Smith journals, on only about 35 of those pages do we have Joseph Smith's handwriting. So in most cases, the journal entries were either dictated or were written by scribes who observed Joseph Smith and kept his journal by assignment. Necessarily, when someone else is writing the journal, they can't be as personal. They don't have the same access to his mind that he does. So they wrote what he said or what they saw him do, but they don't have access to his emotions and feelings the same way. I feel like if you want to get a really good sense of what Joseph Smith was like, what his personality and character were really like, you should focus on the letters and the other materials that he himself wrote. In my opinion, as you read those materials, you find someone that is very open, very earnest, very passionate, someone who cares very much about what the Lord thinks about him, someone who very much wants the approval of the Lord, someone who is open and honest. And it makes it hard to believe from reading these materials that he wrote in his own hand that he would be someone that would deceive other people or that was not sincere.
As with others who have devoted so much time to researching Joseph Smith's teachings, these editors too came away with distinct personal impressions of Joseph Smith.
Yeah, I think probably the greatest aspect of this book contributing to our understanding of the prophet would be that we'll see him as a great teacher. Not just a prophet, I mean, a prophet for sure, but that he was an incredible teacher. He could hold the attention of people for hours on end as he spoke, and even during windstorms and rainstorms, people would stay to listen to the prophet because of the power that he was able to have while he taught. He was just captivating with the doctrine and the truth that he taught. I think that's one of the aspects. The other is, I think the book also will give a good, some personal stories of Joseph Smith, some that are very common and we hear all the time being told about him, but others that are not so common that will bring a renewed perspective about him and a personal touch to the prophet's life. He was not an untouchable someone that you didn't get to look at. He mingled with the members of the church often, and this book tells some of those sweet stories of when he was with children, or when he was just there in a market, or in the store, the brick store that he had at one time. So it gives a personal touch to the prophet's life as well.
What is the most powerful thing that came out of this book for me? That is, I was so impressed by the prophet's interaction with heaven, with heavenly beings. I knew there was a first vision. I knew the angel Moroni came. But I didn't realize how much interaction there was, how many prophets he dealt with, how often he was in touch with heaven. And that is made clear in this book, both through the teachings and through the large amount of biographical historical material that is in the book.
And it's fitting, as we bring this show to a close, that we share with you some examples of some of those teachings found in the manual, such as this from November of 1835. I made this my rule. When the Lord commands, do it.
That was his supreme objective, to teach the truth as he had seen it in vision, as he had received it by the ministering of angels, as he had received it by the Spirit. And however manner he might communicate that in speech, in lecture, in lyceums, in a fireside setting, in homes, in the open air, in churches, in armories, windy days, sunshine, rain, they all wanted to hear, whether it was exhortation, testimony, or a plain preaching by the prophet Joseph Smith.
Some of the really most important things that we have, and we're so fortunate to have them, were the teachings of Joseph Smith to the Nauvoo Relief Society. In the minutes of the 28th of April, 1842, he said, "As you increase in innocence and virtue, as you increase in goodness, let your hearts expand. Let them be enlarged towards others. You must be long-suffering and bear with the faults and errors of mankind. How precious are the souls of man."
While one portion of the human race is judging and condemning the other without mercy, the great parent of the universe looks upon the whole of the human family with a fatherly care and a paternal regard. He views them as his offspring, and without any of those contracted feelings that influence the children of men, causes his Son to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. Another one that I find very helpful, even recently, is on page 51. The prophet says this, "I am glad I have the privilege of communicating to you some things which, if grasped closely, will be a help to you when earthquakes bellow, the clouds gather, the lightnings flash, the storms are ready to burst upon you like peals of thunder. Lay hold of these things, and let not your knees or joints tremble, nor your hearts faint. And then what can earthquakes, wars, and tornadoes do? Nothing." And then he gives the teaching. "All your losses will be made up to you in the resurrection, provided you continue faithful."
Next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, Joseph Smith and the Sacred Music of Mormonism. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.